Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You know, 2020 for me will be remembered as not the year of the pandemic so much, but the year that Petco said, we are doing what entire countries have said. We are not selling electronic shock collars any longer. We're just not selling them anymore. And we are going to take a positive stand, a very definitive stand on dog training. And that's a part of what I want to talk with Darris Cooper about, who's the National Dog Training Education Manager at Petco. It's come up because Channel 9 here, Darris, a local television station reporter, did a great report on someone who did board and train, where they sent their dog off, or two dogs in this case, actually, and said, train my dogs. And they came back with a variety, allegedly, of different issues with the dogs, and licensing for dog trainers came up yet again. I know it's come up in other cities. I know it's come up before in this city as well. You led a forum some time ago of professionals on this very topic. Does licensing dog trainers make sense to you as at least a possibility?
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve, for that question. And thanks for having me on. It's always great chatting with you. And, you know, certainly when you talk about licensing within our dog training industry, this has been a conversation that has evolved over time. Certainly, of course, moments in time recently with pet parents have taken place where this has certainly come into question. You know, when you think about licensing as a whole, you know, there are a lot of benefits to it. And currently, the Alliance of Professional Dog Training, in partnership with APDT and CCPDT, are really acquiring experts from around the country to really think about how can licensure be brought in and adopted to states across the country. Now, of course, being with Petco organization, one thing that I'm steadfast and focused on is ensuring that our trainers and our program is ready for what's to come. So, of course, adopting protocols like Lima into our program, of course, saying no to shock collars, of course, has been a really huge, big piece of our evolution and our journey. But certainly, of course, legislation is a hot topic for sure. But again, I think the more that we come together as an industry, from dog trainers, a veterinarian, behaviorist consultants, truly work together, I really think we're going to like the answer.
Well, I hope you're right about that. You used a whole lot of acronyms in there, so I'll try to catch up on some of those. Well, so Lima is the least intrusive, minimally invasive protocol that seemed to be, because I was there when that all began with the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. I don't know how many years ago it was, and if I did, I wouldn't admit it to anyone. But it was quite a while ago, and came up with those words to describe what we want to do, and that is essentially positive reinforcement. We know, and Petco knows, because Petco's been saying, you've been saying, as the leader of Petco trainers for a while now, quite a while, that positive reinforcement, well, it works better. The dogs are going to learn better. But something else I want to talk about, and that is it's more humane. And when you send your dogs off, I feel this way. I'm going to put you on the spot now. When you send your dogs off to these doggy boot camps, as they're sometimes called, at worst, you have no idea necessarily the technique that that trainer is really using, unless you could watch on camera what the trainer is doing all the time. But even if that trainer is using positive reinforcement methods, and unlike this case in Chicago, the dogs come back in perfect condition, or allegedly didn't come back in Chicago, but do come back in perfect condition and well-trained to that trainer. It's all about the human-animal bond to me. And that trainer can tell you, as the pet parent, this is what I want you to do. Hold the leash like this, walk like this, do this, say this. It's not the same because that person has not been working. The family member has not been working with that dog for a week or two or 3 weeks. A trainer has. So the dog is bonded, if you will, to that trainer's way of training. And no matter how that trainer articulates it to you, it's not the same. And that's the best circumstance. And the worst, as I said, you come back with a dog that isn't quite the same because that dog was not treated appropriately. What do you think about these board and train type things? And they're everywhere.
No, you know, absolutely, Steve. You know, of course, I do think there is a time and place for board and train programs. You know, but one thing I can tell you at PECO, we really do pride ourselves in the fact that we actually train you to train your dog. At the end of the day, our trainers don't go home every single day with, of course, their pet parents and their dogs. So we want to ensure that pet parents are successful and can confidently manage the behaviors that they're experiencing day to day. So again, you know, when I think about questions that pet parents should be asking prior to signing up for classes, you know, some of the ones that come to mind is asking about methodologies. What tools do you use with your training and or board and train programs? And of course, I think, you know, educational backgrounds and certifications are very important, especially in ensuring that the trainers have the knowledge and skill set to be able to successfully provide you with the solutions that you need. And again, positive reinforcement-based training is backed by experts, and it goes back to what you just said earlier. It really does help to reinforce the human and animal bond.
Well, I agree with you, everything you're saying. The problem is that we're here because not everyone is asking those questions. So what I tell people is to audit a class themselves. Go there, you know, so go to PECO, go wherever it is. And if for some reason you feel that feeling in the pit of your stomach, it's not quite right. It's probably not quite right. If the dog's tails aren't wagging, unless it's a dog without a tail, and the people's tails aren't wagging and their smiles are not there on their faces, then it's not probably quite the right class. But people, and that's a very simple thing. Not to mention, I agree with you about looking for certifications. The problem is people generally may not do that, and they may have a dog with a behavior problem, and then they go out of desperation to someone who uses techniques they promise will help. So let me give you an example. There is a guy who travels around the country, I won't say his name, and he does what's called boinking. He rolls up a big beach towel, puts rubber bands around it, and when the dog is, quote, misbehaving, that he prompts the dog to do, by the way, then he throws a towel with rubber bands around at the dog and celebrates that, look, the dog backed down. Well, you tell me how you feel about approaches like that, and then what happens to the dog. Yeah, short term, maybe it looks good somehow. But long-term, tell me about it.
Right. You know, of course, when you think about aversive methods and punishment, specifically when it comes to behavior modification and or training dogs, you know, in that moment, it may or may not look like that behavior was resolved, but there are so many fallouts to punishment, lifelong fallouts that can really stem from one single experience. So again, when I think about the use of punishment, of course, we've evolved within our industry, you know, and I can tell you, looking back many years within training within the United States, you know, we have learned so much. And one thing that we have learned is that dogs and all animals respond wonderfully to positive reinforcement-based training. The impacts are long-lasting. And of course, one thing that, you know, I'm really big on, you know, for me, it's training. Safety comes first, training comes second. And, you know, part of that safety bucket is ensuring that your dog or your pet is healthy. So, of course, making sure that there is, you know, conversation with veterinarians prior to even looking for a trainer. Again, that ensures, of course, the health and wellness of the pet or dog comes first. The training will soon follow after that, of course, utilizing positive reinforcement. So again, it's a long-winded answer, but I think it's all tied together.
No, I think it is too. And I think that's a really good answer. And the question I will ask you next is, all right, we touched on it just a little bit, but how do you look? What should you look for in that dog trainer specifically? He is the guy that knows. Daris Cooper from Petco is here on WGN. We'll be right back. Daris Cooper is here. He's the National Training Education Dog Manager. I hope I have that right. At Petco. Did I get that right?
You got it. You got it right. It's close enough. Close enough. You know, it's funny. Regardless of the title that, you know, I ever get with Petco, the proudest title I'll ever wear is Dog Dad. I think that's something that I have in common with a lot of folks who are listening right now.
Indeed, that is true. So tell me why Petco in 2020, this is how I began the interview, decided, okay, we're not going to sell shock collars anymore, ever, 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 ever.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, one thing that I think we can all agree on is that there are many opinions on how folks should be working and training with dogs. And, you know, it really was a collaboration and just true heart-to-heart conversations with not only the dog training team, but our animal care team, our veterinary council, to really say, what impact do we want to make in the lives of animals and what changes and what can we do to evolve? And that's really where it came from. So it truly was a cross-functional conversation. It certainly didn't happen overnight, but certainly when we made that stance, we stuck to it and we're continuing down our road to really highlighting the importance of positive reinforcement-based training and, of course, supporting every single one of our trainers all across the country.
Well, this is how significant that decision. I mean, you made that decision. I mean, maybe it can't, I don't know. I don't work at Petco. I mean, maybe it took months or years to make, as you allude to. However, it was 2020 in the height of the pandemic that you said, we're not going to sell shock collars anymore. At that point in time, pet stores, every store of any kind, any retailer was looking, please give us business because, you know, we were all locked inside our homes and we were ordering from Petco online. But at that point in time, all businesses were suffering. The pet industry seemed to bounce back a little bit faster than a lot of others. But nevertheless, Petco said at a time that it was most difficult to say it, we're going to do the right thing. So I give you props for that. But this is not just you sitting around the table with other dog guys saying that. There's actually data to demonstrate everything that you're saying, isn't there?
Yeah, 110%. You know, we are definitely a data-driven organization. You know, and I think Ron, our CEO, says it best. And, you know, he says what's good for pets is good for the business, which is, of course, good for Petco. And again, removing shock collars from our shelves was the right thing to do for pets and the right thing to do for Petco. And of course, it really just created just a beautiful conversation. And I'd probably say a movement. And of course, there are other organizations and other countries even looking at that decision to think how they can evolve. And certainly how we, you know, see animals and perceive animals in our lives today has evolved throughout the years. And I definitely like the direction that we're going.
Me too, but the last thing I want to do, and I suspect you'd agree, is dissuade people with this conversation from going to a dog training class. It's just a matter, there are so many benefits to it. So I want to ask you about what those benefits are before I ask, how do you choose the right class for you?
For sure. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, any trainer could agree with this is that we very much so, we all love working with dogs. I think that's why we got into this industry, but we also should love working with people as well, right? So, of course, when you are a pet parent looking for a dog trainer, you know, do your homework, do your research, whether you have a chance to go to their website or go observe the trainer in classes. Of course, asking questions about their experience. You know, one thing that I always recommend is observe trainers in class to see how they interact with not only the dog, but how they interact and coach and develop the pet parents and, yes, even the children in the class as well. So I think there are so many our business is certainly revolving around relationship. And I think, of course, being able to find that right trainer for you, asking those questions and observing if you can before you sign up, I think that also helps.
So why even take your dog to a dog training class?
You know, it's simple. You know, one of the reason why I got into this industry is I saw the overwhelming amount of dogs being relinquished and being sent back to shelters for, and I'm using air quotes here, behavioral problems. Now, when I say behavioral problems, I'm not necessarily talking about dog-on-dog aggressive or aggression or severe anxiety. Dogs are being sent back to shelters simply because they pee on the sofa, or they're having issues with barking. You know, these are what I call housekeeping things that we can easily solve for and proactively get ahead of through training classes. So for me, when I think about dog training classes, it's being proactive versus reactive, and really teaching the dog what we want them to do instead versus focusing on what we don't like that they're doing.
Aha! So to me, what you just said is key also to look for in a dog trainer, and key as to why positive reinforcement training tends to work. So in the old days, when you took that newspaper and people did this, and I bet there are still some people that do, probably fewer and fewer because there are fewer and fewer newspapers out there. But if you find a newspaper and swat the dog because the dog peed over there, you're a year old, you know better. Well, what does that teach the dog to do? So the problem with punishment typically is it might. And my example, it doesn't. It doesn't teach the dog even what not to do, but it might do that, but it never teaches the dog what to do. Can you comment on that?
You know, honestly, you're so spot on. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we are trainers, we are educators, we are teachers. We want to ensure that we are setting the dog up to be successful. So again, when you think about punishment, you know, the old school rolling the newspaper and bopping the dog on the rear end, of course, there are immediate fallouts, of course, that the dog will experience. Of course, at the end of the day, the last thing you ever want your dog to associate you with is something that will potentially be punishing towards them. Because if you think about it this way, the one day that your door is wide open and that dog sees a squirrel, you want to have that trust account built so strong between you and your dog that you can easily call their name and they'll immediately come back to you versus that dog thinking, you know what? Outdoors, that's probably the safest place to be because I'm afraid of that person. So again, immediate fallouts, but again, long-term fallouts from that relationship as well can also take place.
Yeah, a similar thing happened with me and our open door just last week, except the dog called my name as I was running out the door and I came back, but it's somewhat similar. Darris, I wish I had like another hour and a half with you. Because we could talk about this stuff forever. But certainly what my hope is that we help people to better understand the importance of positive reinforcement dog trainers, period, end of story, and perhaps help us to think about the possibility that, yeah, maybe we do need to license dog trainers. Darris Cooper, thank you for everything you continue to do for the industry. National Training Dog and Education Manager, I think, at Petco. Darris, thank you so much.
Steve, thank you, my friend. Have a wonderful day.
You know, some animals you have a bond with, and they are, the term is often heart animals. In my case, two animals that changed my life. And one was a cat by the name of Ricky. Ricky played the piano. You heard me right. I've told the story before, and Ricky has been on WGN radio before. I remember when Ricky was on with Steve and Johnny, and he was playing his piano. He was doing his things. Very social cat, a Devon Rex cat, stark white Devon Rex cat. And he was playing his piano. Yeah, that's right, playing his piano. And then Steve and Johnny go to a commercial break. They come back, and they're asking me some questions. How did you train your cat to play a piano? And meanwhile, Ricky's just walking around the studio and walks on the console. And I don't know what button he pressed, but knocks the radio station off the air. And Steve King, as calm as can be, goes bump, 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 presses a few buttons, and we're back on. We were off for about 3 or 4 seconds, but it seemed like 30 or 40 minutes, right? My heart just stopped. Ricky didn't care. And Steve King responded as the true professional he was and continues to be. I'll tell you, this cat, though, was on television everywhere because he played the piano. And at that point in time, a cat, now you see YouTube and cats are doing all these things. But back then, cats didn't do any of these things. People thought, a cat? They can't do that. Why would you take your cat out in public? We did recitals at Petco and PetSmart and Pet Supplies Plus to raise money for charities. And he jumped through hoops and could sit when you asked him to and give a high five and on and on and on and on. Well, I developed such a relationship with this cat. He knew exactly what I would want him to do. One day we went to the veterinary office and the veterinarian put the stethoscope next to his heart. I saw the expression on her face and I thought, oh, no. Well, it turned out he had a murmur. Now, that's not always bad, but in this case, after we saw the cardiologist, did an ultrasound, it did turn out to be bad. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. That sounds bad, right? Well, Ricky died suddenly. That could be predicted. That's what happens, not always, but often, with cats with HCM. And I began a fund 20 years ago with what was then called the Wynn Feline Foundation. Now, the Every Cat Health Foundation. We've raised well over $300,000. We know a lot more that I don't have time to tell you about. I wish I did, about this disease in cats. We're at a point where, oh boy, we're kind of close to there, where we can provide a medication. We're not going to prevent the disease necessarily, but provide a medication that really does work. But we need your help. Everycat.org to learn more. Everycat.org. Look for special funds. Look for the Ricky Fund. And I hope you do consider making a contribution. To learn more about Ricky, type in his name in the search on my website, which is stevedale.tv. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.